originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am sitting here in our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. Would like to thank everyone listening tonight to the Horse Racing Radio Network on Sirius 219 XM 206, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to former riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you're able to help, please visit the website at www.pdjf.org. So my guest this evening, a multiple graded stakes winning jockey who just received the 2017 Mike Venezia Memorial Award. He's one of the best I've had the pleasure of riding with. He's won 7 riding titles at Parks, and now he's making a name for himself on the New York circuit. It's a pleasure to introduce jockey Kendrick Carmouche. Kendrick, welcome to the show.
Oh, how y'all doing? Thank you very much. I really appreciate all that good talk you was just saying. I just really appreciate you having me on the show today.
You're the best, Kendrick. Couldn't wait to get you here on the show, and to start things off, Kendrick, as they say around here in Kentucky, you're not from around these parts. You have an accent, so tell us where you're from.
I'm from Louisiana, born and raised.
Born and raised in Cajun country. And what part of Louisiana, Kendrick?
Cam Crow, Lafayette. I'm from Lake Charles. I was born in Lake Charles, but I moved to Lafayette, Cam Crow, raised up around that area. A lot of family out there. All my family, put it like that. Only me and my brother is on the East Coast.
You know, Kendrick, I've never had crawfish. I hear that's pretty big down there.
Oh, you never had them? You never had them until you had them my way.
Really?
A lot of people can eat them, but you got to eat them my way. And then, Jippy, then you can probably move on to bigger and better things because mine are pretty good.
Really? Well, I'll have to check those out one of these days, Kendrick, for sure. But it's also, besides crawfish, it's also horse racing country, obviously. And how old were you when you first were introduced to the sport?
Oh, my dad was a rider, so I pretty much just lived in it, you know. So I just followed my dad the whole time and just watched everything he done because he done everything good in my eyes, so I had to make sure I complete the task of what he set out to do, you know. And in life right now, it's just to get to that point where I'm riding with some of the top jocks in the country and know that I can ride in my mind and my heart, and I'm giving 100% effort every time. It makes me proud to be a jockey from Louisiana. How hard we work and how hard we get to, you know, accomplish things if you only work harder.
Well, I'm sure you make your dad proud as well, Kendrick. And how long did your dad ride for?
My dad rode for 16, 17 years off and on. And I think I've been riding for 17 years now since I was 16 years old.
Wow. How old were you when you first sat on the back of a horse?
Whew. I was at least 12, 13 years old, galloping in Louisiana on farms. So by the time I turned 16, I was ready to ride already. That's how advanced I was. I didn't look good, but I knew what to do to win a race.
Wow. And so did you, so you started, you actually took out your license when you were just 16?
16 years old. My mom was my agent.
Really?
My mom had me and my dad as jockeys, and we done very good together.
Nice.
Very good. Very good.
Keeping it all in the family there, Kendrick. How is that working with your mom? You know, usually you can blame your agent for everything, but I guess when she's your mom, you got to be pretty careful about that.
Well, you do have a point, but you always got to remember, you know, you love your mom no matter what. So, you know, she's trying to make the best decision for you. So you just got to roll with it. And you got to think that in other people's minds, too, if you're a good-hearted person. You know, you got to think they're trying to make the right decision. We're only human.
That's right. That's exactly right. How long did it take for you to win your first race?
The first week of Evangeline, after we left Delta Downs, after Delta Downs, we went to Evangeline Downs, the old Evangeline Downs. And my mom told me, well, your daddy got a double car, and they both can win, but I'm going to leave him on the better trainer horse, Keith Bourgeois. I said, oh, well, that sounds good. He said, I'm going to put you on your cousin horse. I said, oh, that's good. My dad went on him. I can win on him like that. You know, saying in the back of my mind, I'm not telling him that. But sure enough, I went on that horse. And my dad, when we left out the gate for the first quarter of a mile, my dad's horse broke a leg going into the first turn. And then I had to ride that race. And I just remembered everything that I had to do. I ended up winning by like 2 or 3 lengths.
Wow.
Never forget the horse, Earl and Aaron. I went on him 3 times.
3 times. You had to be, that had to be hard for you to forget the fact that your dad's horse just broke down. You have to focus on the race. That had to be difficult.
Oh, you got to lock in right away just because, you know, it's just, you got to block it out. You just really have to block it out. You know, he's going to be all right. That's the first thing you can think of and just move on from there.
Was he okay?
Oh, yeah, he was okay. He ended up pulling the horse up. And,
yeah.
You know, then after that, it was all smiles and laughter after that.
Did they get you good after the race?
Oh, always, you know, always. My dad grabbed me. He was the first one to grab me.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And when did your brother start riding?
You know, my brother started later after me. He's 1 year older than me, but he started after me. He used to ride quarter horses and thoroughbred. And then I got him into riding just thoroughbreds, and that's what he pretty much stuck with. He just was, he was always taller and bigger than me.
Yeah. Yeah, he is taller than you, and you're pretty tall yourself. How tall are you, Kendrick?
I'm like 5'7".
Wow. Taller than me.
Tough.
Yeah, very.
It's not easy.
Not at all. What do you do to keep your weight down?
You just adjust to what you eat throughout the days, and just know when it's time for racing. You got to really cut back on everything. Everything you got to eat in half instead of eating a full meal.
Right.
It's not easy.
No,
it's not easy.
Yeah, you have to.
You know, when you love the sport, you have to put every ounce of body and physical mind into this sport, because you want to be the best that you can.
Joggy Kendrick Carmouche is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kendrick, while we're talking about Louisiana, I want to know, did you ever ride on the bush tracks?
Oh, yes, I did. One time, it scared the crap out of me.
Understandable.
I never broke out the gates before. And my dad told me, come on, I'll hold you in the gates, and you can ride the four-horse race. I said, all right, whatever. He said, I'm going to teach you today. I said, all right. Didn't bother me. I knew how to ride a horse. I just never broke out the gates. Sure enough, he put me in there. I broke out of there. I told my dad, never again.
Never again.
Never again.
That was it.
It scared me.
I've heard stories, so I can only imagine, Kendrick, what that must have been like.
Southern living and just riding just to have fun. It's unbelievable.
I bet. Well, so you stayed in Louisiana for the beginning of your career, but you didn't wait long to move out east.
No, you know, I was in Texas. I was in Sam Houston Race Park whenever they called me. It was Jack Service, John Service's dad, and it was Randy Allen and Lisa Allen. It was in Philadelphia, and they called me to come to Philly Park. Jack Service said he wanted to take my book. I left the next 3 days. I got on the airplane.
Wow.
Mom and Dad say never pass up opportunities because you might not never get it again. So you got to run with it.
That's right.
It got me pretty far.
You were young when you moved to Philly, too.
Oh, I was 17 years old.
Wow. So you
17.
You rode there for quite a while. And what was it like when you first arrived there at Philly Park?
Oh, it was so cold. And I'm from Louisiana, so it had snowed like a foot of snow. Never forget, it was 2 days after my birthday. I was like, wow, it's so cold out here. Called my mom. Mom, you never told me it was going to be this cold. She was like, you staying? I said, yep, I'm staying. I'll be all right.
Wow.
Ever since then, I love the cold, to be honest. I love it. I mean, the heat is nothing because it's hot in Louisiana, but I love the cold.
You're crazy.
Well, you got to do it.
Well, it's true.
You know, you got to do it. It's part of the job. I mean, you just got to man up or woman up, either one.
That's right. And how long did it take for you to really start taking off there at Philly?
Oh, it took me a while because I went to Charlestown for a while, and then I went to Arkansas. So it took me a while whenever I came back because I went back to Delaware, too, and I ended up third leading rider there. Then I wanted to go to Philadelphia, and that didn't – once I decided that's where I wanted to go, I knew I could have do some damage because I've been there. But it was tough. I had them rode with Ramon Dominguez, Rod Madrigal, Stu Elliott. I mean, I can go on and on. Tony Black. It's just the older heads taught you more out there because they pretty much knew the course of the racetrack and how to ride it. So it was pretty good riding with those guys. You know, I learned a lot. You know, you can't really say they taught me a lot. It's just that you had to pay attention to learn because you can learn better if you pay attention to good jockeys and bad ones, but mostly good ones.
It's very true, Kendrick. I got to tell a quick story. I'll never forget. I was turning for home at Parks, and you were behind me, and I was, I don't know, fourth, mid-pack. Didn't have a shot to win it. And I kept yanking my horse's head, trying to get him to switch leads. And you come past me. You said, stop trying to make him switch leads. He doesn't want to do it. I'll never forget, because you were behind me at that point. They don't want to switch.
I mean,
don't make him switch.
Just leave him. Just leave him.
But on that subject, I'm learning
from... You're better off.
Exactly. On the subject of learning from some of the greats, I had the opportunity of learning from you. And that was awesome. You really helped me out a lot. So, Kendrick, want to take the opportunity to say thank you for that, because I never forgot that. And I can only imagine what it must have been like riding with some of the greats you just mentioned. Tony Black, I mean, he's one of the best. Stuart Elliott also. Just so many great names you just mentioned. And before long, I mean, you eventually dominated Parks. You won 7 riding titles at Parks. And when I arrived, you were just consistently the leading rider there. And then all of a sudden you decide that you're going to move on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, well, you know, each year I went out there and I improved better with riding. And, you know, I really had to stay in Philadelphia long enough where I could have learned how to ride before I went to New York, because it's not easy riding in New York. So I wanted to stay there and polish my skill as long as I could. But, you know, after you get, if you get complacent in life, you never want to move on from any situation. So, you know, you got to be strong enough to see you can do it and move on and ride with those guys and figure out how to ride with them, because you go in a day house. So you gotta understand, you gotta get to learn their system. I just studied. I've done a lot of homework over the years, and I still do my homework whenever I study. You gotta know every jock. You gotta know every horse on the racetrack, no matter where they come from or anything. That's what make you a good rider. And once I figured that out at Parks, you just gotta keep doing it. It works. It works.
What do you do to prepare for a race? Do you handicap the race and talk to or watch replays? What do you do exactly?
I mean, replays after replays. You got to watch the trips on horses. You got to watch what jockey riding, because every jockey don't fit every horse. So, you know, you got to see if you can improve something that he didn't do that you might see the horse might like in the race. So, with that being said, You every jockey got different hands, so you got to make sure you prepare yourself good enough to ride that horse if you're paying attention to him. I pretty much, at Belmont, I've been there for 2 or 3 years. I pretty much know most of the horses there and what they do, so that's how you got to ride when you're in the race, because you know what horse going to drift out, what horse going to lug in, all of that. You got to know all of it. It's like playing a gallop racing game. You got to know every spot.
Gallop racer, yeah. That's right. And how about the racetrack? Do you get more comfortable once you've been at a specific track for a while? Do you kind of get to know, like Parks, didn't really want to be down on the inside when we rode there, and you get to know the quirks of the racetrack.
Once you figure that out, too, that really helps.
Exactly.
That really helps.
So you
get, it's the same thing at Aqueduct. Whenever I first went to Aqueduct, the quarter pole is where the 3/8 pole at on our mile track. So you really just totally have to change all ways of riding. Just ride a little bit, sit a little bit longer, or, you know, you got to take it to them. It's one of the two, you know, because the track is so big in New York. But I like it because you can sit longer.
Was it always a goal of yours to go to New York?
Yeah, I always wanted to ride with the big jugs, because you know I feel like if I proved myself through my career, everywhere I done went, I done pretty much competed. You know, I got to that level where, you know, I can always do more if given opportunity. You know, that's just the way it works in any kind of sport, any kind of business. You know, you gotta have yourself set up for opportunity whenever it presents itself in New York, you know. So when that time come, I'll be ready. But for right now, I just love it, you know. It's you're riding against good riders. You're riding good horses. You got to ride the race. You will be a winner.
Well, you've already been on center stage, Kendrick. In 2011, you rode Perfect Officer in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. Tell us what that experience was like.
Oh, man, I tell you, I mean, any of them, you got to be nervous to be in any of them situations, just because I always feel like I want to get a good break whenever it comes to that. And the whole thing is just so exciting. It's like, you know, you never made it, but you did make it there. You know, like it's just something that probably every jockey wants, you know, and that's, I mean, so good. So good.
Do you remember the race?
Oh, whenever. I tell you what, it was Steve Asmussen horse who won the race, mm-hmm, at Churchill. Corey Nakatani rode the horse. And I finished third, and I think Green Mass might have finished second for Wesley Ward. Everything got messed up in the middle of the turn when the horse bolted. from behind horses where everybody had to go wide. I got an inside pass. But my horse couldn't make up the distance. He had to be right next to the winner to beat the winner, or he was going to get run down because he never leveled off with you. He was one of them type of horses. If I could have get earlier position, I really think in that race, that horse could have prevailed to be the winner in that race. It was going to be close.
Do you think about that sometimes, Kendrick? Does that drive you nuts, laying in bed at night, maybe staring at the ceiling, you can't sleep, and you think about instances like that where it's like, oh, if that just would have happened this way and I could have won that race? Or do you ever think about that? Do you just turn the page?
No, I think about it, but you got to really turn the page because you can't beat yourself up about it. The ones that bother me more is whenever I know I gave a horse a bad trip. You know, that hurts me more than getting, you know, maybe I could have got this position or whatever. It hurts me more to see me get a horse beat. I beat myself up for a week before I just let it go and be like, you know, all right, it's all good. Move on. It's not the first time.
Jockey Kendrick Carmouche is joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kendrick, who would you say is the nicest horse you've had the pleasure of riding?
You know what? I rode a horse for Mark Henning. Mark Henning, that was the year I finished third leading jockey in, behind Ramon and Jeremy Rose. I rode a horse that was, his name was Barcolo. That was his name. He was a pleasure to ride. I mean, he just, Mark just coming just to let him roll. Don't grab him. He used to go a mile and an eighth, mile and a quarter on the dirt. Oh, he was unbelievable.
Really?
Unbelievable.
And what did he end up doing in his career?
I end up winning. He won six stakes in Delaware. I won all six stakes on him.
Nice.
And then they sent him to California on the poly track. He didn't like it. He never was the same after that. But that was. He jump started my career at Delaware whenever I was doing good.
Bacolo. Okay, so now I got to ask you, favorite racetrack?
Oh, man, favorite racetrack. People not going to believe it whenever I say this, man. This is the place that taught me how to ride. Charlestown Racetrack.
Charlestown, really?
Yes.
Wow. I'm surprised to hear that, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason why I say it is, you know, Saratoga is beautiful and wonderful, and you see all these amazing people, and you're at, you know, center of attention, but, you know, I love it, Saratoga, but I'm just saying, like, Charlestown was my favorite track just because it taught me how to ride after I lost the bug, because being in Charlestown, it's a bull ring, you got to ride aggressive, and it just taught me so much. Then once I left there, I was ready to ride against better riders because I knew what to do to make sure nobody got out of holes or whatever, and I could have won the race. It was just, that's my favorite.
You learn how to get out of the gate there, right?
Oh, you have to. I mean, that or just sit. I mean, everybody used to think you had to send at a bull ring. I mean, I thought if you sit and save ground, it was the best thing to do, and you could have won the race.
It's definitely, I remember riding there several times. It's definitely a good learning experience. As you mentioned, you really learn a lot by riding there at the bull ring, boy. You better be tied on, right?
You better be ready.
You better be ready. Oh, wow. Have you ridden there lately?
I never been there in a while, but man, I can watch races there all night just because, man, I imagine myself riding certain races with these guys, you know, it's no different. You got to keep your skills sharp.
That's right. Well, now talking about New York, completely different. New York, you've been there for a little while now, and you really started making a name for yourself there, Kendrick. You're just, I mean, especially this winter, you just absolutely killed him up there. And tell me what it was like when you first arrived.
I mean, in New York, you know, it's pretty much, you know, we all cross each other's paths no matter which way we go in the world, in jockey world, you know. So, you know, it was pretty good. You know, they know I'm Kendrick, and I'm always be Kendrick. You know, I'm just a happy guy, you know, want to see good for everybody. I just want to do good myself, you know. So, you know, it was more of a welcome, you know. So, and that's what I like, you know. And everybody get along. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Well, it had to be an honor when you received the 2017 Mike Venezia Memorial Award. That had to be a really special feeling.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful because, you know, you can only think about dad and mom whenever you get such a prestige award like that, you know?
They have to be so proud of you, Kendrick. Were they? Do you keep in touch with them? Do they watch you ride regularly?
Oh, every day. Every day.
Does your dad?
Every day they watch me ride.
Does your dad?
Daddy loves it.
Does he ever give you advice or point out things he thinks you should do differently or anything like that?
Oh, he still do. He still do, which I appreciate it because, you know, that means, you know, you don't know everything, and that's really good.
This is true.
That's really good. Daddy still can teach you, and he's retired.
Will they come up to Saratoga to visit you?
No, they can't come out of town because my mom and all of them start school, and the grandkids and my dad still work at Evangeline Downs. So they're not going to be able to come up. They're going to come up. I'm going to get them up for the winter where they can feel the cold one of these days.
I'll tell you what, Kendrick, I'm coming up to Saratoga, and I hope I get to see you at the PDJF event, the Jockey Karaoke. Will you be there?
Yeah, we'll be there. We'll be there. Don't know if I'm singing.
You got to sing.
Or dancing, but I will be there.
You got to sing, Kendrick.
I'm thinking
about it. Come on now.
I'm thinking about
Come on. Well, Kendrick, I only got about a minute left here, just doing the 30-minute show today, but tell me quickly, what future goals do you have for yourself?
Stay healthy. Keep faith. And anything you can believe in can come true. That's my goal.
Kendrick, I love it. Thank you so much for joining us this evening, Kendrick, and wishing you all the best.
Thank you very much for having me. Y'all have a great day.
Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. While you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can listen to. And don't forget, join me and the Big A, Anthony Stabile, tomorrow at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. We will bring you 3 hours of live racing coverage right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigle, and thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
The following is a special encore presentation of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Originally airing in December of 2016, this episode features jockey Drayden Van Dyke.
This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who tucked Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Time flies. It's been just over a year since we brought you the very first episode of Jock Talk. We are so grateful to have had the opportunity to spend time with some of racing's greatest memories I know I will never forget. And it's actually all coming full circle this evening as our guest tonight has a special connection to our very first guest last year. We'll talk about that and more during this special holiday edition of Jock Talk. Another spectacular hour spent with a young up-and-coming superstar in racing. He was the 2014 Eclipse Award-winning apprentice, after all, with 263 wins and over $11 million in earnings so far. Those numbers are just rapidly growing. I'm here tonight with jockey Drayden Van Dyke. Drayden, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So great to have you here on the show with us, and 21 years old and already just making a name for yourself. It has to be a little bit surreal, Drayden. Here we are almost to 2016, and looking back at the very beginning, you've come so far. And what do you think looking back?
I'm very humbled. I'm good at staying humbled because I was brought up the right way to not get a big head under the guidance of Tom Proctor and Hall of Fame jockeys of Gary Stevens and Mike Smith. They're very close to me, and with their guidance, it just taught me how to handle my success, and to know that you can lose it at any time, and you can go from being the best jockey to one of the to the lower ones. But I'm very happy to where I'm at today. But it didn't come easy. It came with a lot of preparation from when I was in high school. I was even preparing before I even became a jockey. I was preparing myself. But very humbled and not only humbled but proud of myself as well.
As you should be, Drayden. And you talk about the preparation that you had to go through to get to this point where you are now. And let's talk about that. So When did the idea first pop into your head that you wanted to be a jockey?
Right. I grew up in Hot Springs, Arkansas, going to school there. I went to Lake Hamilton High School in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and lived with my mom. And my late father, he lived in Kentucky in Churchill Downs. So during the summer break of school, I would go visit my dad. And at first, the track, I could barely even wake up to go there, so I'd just stay home. But I started kind of getting a little interest in it, and so I started going to work with my dad and just looking at stuff and being around the horses. Eventually, I started hot walking and just working my way up. And so that's kind of how I got the bug and just fell in love with the horses. But my preparation during school, like mainly in high school, I'd run before school would start. So it's like school started at like 7 o'clock in the morning. I'd wake up at like 5 a.m. and go run like 3 or 4 miles every day before school. And it wasn't one of those really good equalizers that they have now, but it was kind of a cheap, crappy made one. But I'd get on that and just ride and just I'd like ride like 5 races before I go to school, just things like that. And all my friends thought I was crazy, but now they don't think I'm crazy. Now,
think you're crazy at all.
No, not at all. Everyone's proud of me. My family, my whole family's proud, and all my old buddies back in Arkansas, they're very proud of me. But yeah, just things like that. And probably around 15 is when I really decided I wanted to be a jockey. 15, 16, I was tiny, probably weighed like 90 pounds and stuff. I weigh around 107 now. Yeah, around that time. So
you were always a natural lightweight, and obviously sounds like you were always very athletic if you were that dedicated to wake up in the mornings and run before school and ride the Equisizer. Yeah. I heard that you were cut from your high school basketball team.
Yeah, I tried. I was in love with basketball. I'm still am. I love playing it, and I'm pretty good, but I just wasn't tall enough, and the point in time when I tried out, I wasn't the best I could be, so I just got cut. I almost made the team, but I was like the second to last one to get on the team, or whatever. But I didn't make the team. So after that kind of happened to me, I said, man, I gotta figure something out. I don't really like anything else, so I focused everything on my life, my routines, and everything on horses.
Well, it certainly paid off. You made the right decision. And so tell us what it was like going with your dad to the track and getting that first dose of what that life would be like, and just describe to us the life at the track in those early years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at first, like I said before, I was younger, so I wasn't used to getting up early. So I could barely keep my eyes open, and I would sleep in the office where my dad was working. He was an exercise rider at the time. And, I would sleep in the office, and by the time I would wake up, training would be over. But I got adjusted to it, and as soon as I could start kind of staying awake, I'd walk around. My dad was working for a trainer. His name's James Baker, Jimmy Baker, out there in Kentucky. And I'd walk around with Baker and just watch training. Really, just I'd watch horses all every morning, every day. And the what really caught me was the smells of the track. You'd smell like shavings or the smell of the horses. Some smells aren't too great. You'll walk by like a where they dump the manure and stuff. But it's a unique smell that just the different smells is very unique of the track. And the characters of the track is every track you go to, there's workers around there, and they're just characters. It's kind of like it's not like circus, but the kind of gypsy type people. They live off nothing and pick up everything that they have and travel to state to state to care for the horses, and it's just cool. But a jockey lifestyle is different than that. On a regular day for me, like I would wake up and go work my horses and go home and prepare for the races that I have that day. But stuff like that. Is every there's so many unique things of the backside and the racetrack. There's, you got the front side where the grandstand is and the spectators come to watch, and just, there's so many different things on the racetrack that's so so unique and interesting, and I love it.
It really is its own little world of its own. And Drayden walking around Churchill, a trainer by the name of Tom Proctor soon noticed you.
Yeah. I was saying he's a good friend with Jimmy Baker. And at that time, I just graduated high school, and I moved from Arkansas with my dad to Kentucky. And I was trying to go out there, and I had experience of riding horses, but not the proper way to learn how to ride yet, and walking around, kind of getting on horses, jogging them, shed rowing them, and just simple stuff. And yeah, Proctor noticed me, and he seen how small I was, and he's seen me around before, because I was going to Kentucky at least, I'd have to say, 3 years, 4 years in a row every summer, so he knew of me. And he trains for a very famous and well-known owner of they're called Glen Hill Farm. They're based in Ocala, Florida. And Proctor thought it'd be a good idea if he gave me the best opportunity of my life, and I'm glad I took it to go stay 6 months at Glen Hill Farm and learn how to break babies and just become what he calls a true horseman, to care for them, break them, clean them, walk them, ride them, turn them out, everything, and just work hard. And that's what he did for me. And when those babies were done being broke and 6 months passed, I learned with those horses, and the horses learned with me. And when they shipped to the racetrack here, out here in California, I shipped out there with them, and that's how I started. And without that opportunity and Proctor giving me that chance, I would be nowhere close to where I'm at today. So I owe a lot to him and everyone at Glen Hill Farm. The president of Glen Hill Farm, his name's Craig Burnick, and the owner. Right now, I think he's in his late 80s, maybe early 90s. His name's Leonard Levin. Great people, and just blessed to get the opportunity.
Well, Tom Proctor saw something in you in the early, early years, and he wasn't wrong. And you moved to California with him to eventually ride those same horses that you learned on. And what was that like to know those horses so well, and then to go and eventually, as we'll later talk about, ride them in races?
It was a very unique experience. Probably not many people have ever got to experience that. I knew all these horses like the back of my hand, and of course I was around them for 6 months, and I kind of knew each one's talent level, and I had a couple favorites I liked, and to see if they turned into what you thought they were going to be, which some of them really did. It was really cool. Of course, the really good ones, I didn't get a chance to ride because I wasn't at that level yet. I just started. And, of course, that's where Gary Stevens took over. But the other ones that weren't, they were great. They were good, but they weren't stake horses. But there's about probably about four or five that I got to break and I got to ride and I got to win on multiple times. And that was a very cool thing to do. And riding for Proctor and Glen Hill Farm, it's the most relaxing people to work for or to ride for, because it's like kind of like my home base, kind of. And it's just fun when I get to win a race for them, especially I just won my first stake race for Glen Hill Farm, not my first stake race, but for the farm. And it's just I couldn't be any happier to win for a race for than that farm. So,
well, congratulations. Yeah. That does have to be a very gratifying feeling. People who believed in you and helped you along the way, and then to go on and win a stake race for them, and you actually your very first win was aboard Money Clip for Tom Proctor. Tell us about that day.
Yeah, here in California, when we get maybe a little bit of rain, things get muddy really easy because it hardly ever rains out here. So that particular day, I've rode one previous race before this day. My first race was on a horse named Two Term Leader for Glen Hill Farm. And, of course, I got that first race out of the way. I maybe finished sixth or seventh, lower on the board. But, yeah, that day, Money Clip, Gary Stevens was supposed to ride him on the turf. There's a maiden special weight on the turf. I think it was going 6 furlongs, like a sprint on the turf. So it rained. They took it off the turf, and this was at Hollywood Park, so they had what you call a poly track. So, and that was the only horse Gary Stevens was on that day. So Tom called up Stevens, and he said, "Hey, Gary, if you want to, you can take the day off. We're just going to," Tom kind of gives them like a schooling race to get education if he doesn't think they're ready to win first time out. So, he didn't think this horse was ready to win first time out, so he said, "Hey, Gary, you can just kind of stay home. It's raining outside and nasty, and we'll just put Drayden on." And he said, "Gary's like, oh yeah, cool. That sounds cool with me." And so they named me on the horse. I broke from the gate. My horse, I remember, I was dead last, and I was just sitting on him really. And before I know it, I was just creeping up on the horses without even asking him, and just kind of swung him out. There's a bunch of horses in front of me backing up, swung him out, and just asked him a little bit. And he, honestly, all the other horses were getting so tired because they went so fast. And I just creeped up and barely had to ride him and won the race, my first race for my career and for Tom and for Glen Hill Farm. It was just one of the best days of my life, and talk about it all the time. Just the events that led up to it and how it just kind of fell into place. And it was a great day.
Wow. We're here with jockey Drayden Van Dyke joining me on Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Drayden, someone was watching that first victory from the jocks room at Churchill, your father. And how was that to have him watching, and he had to be so proud?
Oh, yeah, I had about, before I could even get to the jocks room, of course, they tased me with baby powder, eggs, water, all, you name it. They threw it on me, ice, and got back to the jocks room and got high fives from everyone, Mike Smith and just the whole California jockey colony. And got back, sat down, my valet took off my boots and everything, and I was just in shock. I was just so happy, and I went to go look at my phone, and, geez, I had about 50 text messages already, and Twitter tweets and Instagram and Facebook, everything, and missed calls and just crazy stuff. And, of course, I responded to my mom and dad first and called them, and they're just so happy for me. And of course, my dad, he was a jockey, and he just I don't know, I wish he was here today to explain what he felt, but I'm sure he was so proud of me. And I tried to continue to make him proud today. He's not with us anymore, but I know I'm making him proud, and making my mom proud. She's still with us, and just my family, they're just so proud of me, and I don't know, just trying to do my best every day. So.
Oh, I'm sure he is very, very proud of you, Drayden. And tell us about someone who kind of stepped in as a role of kind of guiding you along the way, Mike Smith.
Yeah, boy, has he been so crucial in my my career, and as a I call him like a father figure. He reminds me. It's crazy. It's really weird. Gary Stevens and Mike Smith, they come from the same era as my dad grew up, so their attributes and stuff like that, it reminds me so much of my dad, and I feel like I'm around him when I'm around them, and especially Mike. And I lived with him. I stayed out here with Proctor for a little while in his apartment, and went to Del Mar, and I needed a roommate. I didn't know really where I was going to stay, and of course Mike offered, and shoot, from there on out until recently, about 3 months ago, I lived with him for about a year, about the whole year. I was an apprentice. I lived with Mike Smith, and he was there with me for me when my dad died. I was staying down there with him in Del Mar, and man, he just told me, I never forget it. He said he'll always be there for me, anything I need, anything. So he kind of took over as like a father figure for me. And we go see movies, we go out to eat, we work out, and we go shopping, we do everything together, and we're best friends, and we consider ourselves family. And to be like that with a writer and Hall of Famer and person like Mike, he's well known as a, not only as a great jockey, but a five-star person too. And I'm lost for words to even explain how lucky I am to have him.
Five-star person indeed. As I mentioned in the intro for tonight's show, Mike Smith was actually our very first guest on the very first Jock Talk over a year ago. And what a great mentor to have, Drayden. Just a super, super person, as you said. And actually, I heard a funny story that one morning while you were living with Mike, you were late to work a set of horses for Proctor, and they kicked you out of the house. Is that right?
Yeah, as people know, if they've been to Del Mar, it's not cheap to get housing, and the house that we stayed in was pretty expensive. Not going to go into how much I paid for my part, but it was a big amount, and I actually didn't show up for that morning for certain reasons that I can't explain on here, and old Proctor, he's tough, he's old school. He doesn't want me to become as what you call like a punk, or like thinking I'm too good that, oh, I can't show up to work or stuff like that. No, that's not him at all. So, and that's not me at all either, but everyone misses work every once in a while. It's a thing, but
of course.
Yeah, he told me either I can ride for him or and move in the tack room, or I couldn't ride for him and stay in a nice house with old Mike Smith and not show up for work. So I had to move in the tack room from this nice house I'm staying in into a cobweb, dirt on the floor tack room. The door didn't even shut all the way. It was bad. And so I stayed in there for a week, and I proved to Tom that I was serious about everything. I'm there to learn, and I'm there to listen, and I do what I'm told, and no back talking, or like I'm showing him that I understand where he's coming from. And he laughs about it now. I'm sure he's told the story to everyone. And he says, man, I couldn't believe you stayed in that tack room for a full week. If I were you, I would have told myself to screw off, and I'm not staying in that tack room anymore. But I never said anything like that. I stayed in there until he told me. He finally felt bad for me, And I, of course, every morning I had that mean smirk on my face, knowing I'm not happy. And he seen it, and he kind of he thought it was hilarious the whole freaking time. He thought it was hilarious. But yeah, eventually he said I could go back and move in with Mike, and I haven't missed a day since. So
wow, that hard lesson learned, but you did learn that. Right? After living in a tack room. That is hilarious. And Drayden, unfortunately, we're not going to get a full hour with you. We only have a couple minutes left. But take us fast forward to the Eclipse Awards of 2014. Wow. How was that to win that award?
Yeah, that's been a goal of mine ever since I even heard of the Eclipse Awards That was my main goal as when I started to ride, and my agent really helped me to achieve that. Her name is Sarah Wolf, and I was riding here in California Thursday through Sunday, and Tom had me going to Tur Paradise in Phoenix, Arizona, on Monday through Wednesday, the dark day that in California where we don't race. I raced in Arizona to win that many more races and get that experience in. And I think it was very crucial for me to win the Eclipse Award. I believe I won, I think, I can't remember the number. It had to be at least 50 or 60 extra wins.
Wow.
To my tally of wins. And it truly helped me, and I'm truly happy that I did it. It was hard. A lot of late night flights and early mornings, and a lot of hard work. And I had a different agent there handling my business in Phoenix. His name was Steve Nolan, and Seven was handling my business out here in California. So, big thanks to them and everyone that gave me a chance to ride their horses and get a win for them. They helped me achieve the greatest goal of any apprentice. Any apprentice wants to win that award, and you only have one chance to win it. And to achieve that and have that trophy in my house is, man, I look at it every day. I kiss it. I love that trophy, and no one can ever take that away from me. And one of my greatest achievements of all time so far.
You should be very proud, Drayden. All that hard work paid off and will continue to pay off. Unfortunately, we're all out of time. Drayden, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Anytime.
Thank you. And if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can listen on our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, I'm Christina McManigal. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Get ready for the third annual Jockeys and Jeans charity event to benefit the PDJF coming to Gulfstream Park on Sunday, February 28th. Last year, Jockeys in Jeans raised more than $200,000 to benefit permanently disabled riders, and you can help make this year's event even bigger. Meet and mingle with an all-star cast of jockeys, including Lafitte Pinkai Jr., Georgie Velasquez, Pat Day, Randy Romero, and many more. Tickets go on sale at the beginning of January, and donations and sponsorship can be purchased starting December 7th. For more information, visit jockeysandjeans.com.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Pena, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. First, let's head to New Mexico, where Rye Eichelberry had a great week, capped off with two stakes wins at Sunland Park. Eichelberry finished the week with 4 wins, 3 seconds, and 3 third-place finishes. Irad Ortiz Jr. had a solid week at Aqueduct by finishing in the money on 69% of his mounts. His week was highlighted by wins in the Queens County Stakes aboard Financial Modeling and the New York Stallion Series Stakes aboard Frosty Margarita. For the week, Ortiz finished with 7 wins, 5 seconds, and 6 third-place finishes. Jose Ortiz also had a strong week in New York and led North America in wins and earnings. His consistent riding found him in the money on an impressive 81% of his mounts. Ortiz finished the week with 10 wins, 11 seconds, and 5 third-place finishes. Finally, our Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week, Ashley Broussard, had a week to remember at Delta Downs. Broussard, who is an apprentice, got her first stakes win of her career aboard Oh Baby, Oh Baby in the Lookout Stakes. She then followed that up on Saturday with her second stakes win aboard Deep Bottom in the Be Connected Stakes. For the week, Broussard finished with 6 wins, 6 seconds, and 2 third-place finishes. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, is the perfect gift for anyone who has wondered what it takes to be a professional jockey. The sport's most prominent jockeys and trainers tell their stories and share their insights on all that goes on behind the scenes. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all of the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.